Cantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Career Diplomacy, Life and Work in the U.S. Foreign Service, 4th edition, by Harry W. Kopp and John K. Nayland. Narrated by B.J. Harrison. Publisher's Note: In this audio edition, you will hear references to figures and tables present in the print and e-book formats of the book. Preface. Whether America's diplomacy succeeds or fails depends, to a large extent, on its foreign service professionals. Career diplomacy describes the foreign service as an institution, a profession, and a career. It provides a full picture of the organization, including its history and its role in American foreign affairs. It is an insider's guide to the Foreign Service, written by insiders who speak frankly about its weaknesses as well as its strengths. It is not a polemic. The authors have mostly resisted the temptation to tell the world what is wrong and how to set it right. This is the 4th edition, the 3rd revision of a book that first appeared in 2008. Since the last revision, in 2017, the U.S. Foreign Service has changed in many ways. The Trump administration delivered shocks to the traditional norms and standards of American diplomatic practice. Members of the Foreign Service were led to examine assumptions about the nature of their work that had been taken for granted. Strengths and shortcomings of the Foreign Service were exposed. This edition helps tell that story of reinvention. It captures recent changes in the Foreign Service, ranging from how to get in to what to expect throughout the course of a career. It looks forward to a re-emphasis on diplomacy under the Biden administration. Listeners of this book will come to understand who America's professional diplomats are, what they do, the behavior they reward, and the culture in which they operate. If you are in the Foreign Service, career diplomacy will teach you things you did not know. If you are thinking about joining the service, this book will help you make a wise decision. Washington, D.C., March 2021. Part 1. The Institution. 1. What is the Foreign Service? "Look," he said, "what do we need them for, especially so many of them?" He was talking about members of the U.S. Foreign Service. "What we need to know," he continued, "is mostly in the news. What we need to say should come from people in tune with the president, not from diplomats in tune with each other." The speaker was a businessman with international interests. His listener was a former Foreign Service officer. His question was serious and deserves a careful answer. Why does the United States need its Foreign Service, professionals who spend the bulk of their careers in the U.S. embassies and consulates around the globe? Does the work they do need to be done? And if it does, could others do it better or more efficiently? Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, answers those questions. In our unstable, unpredictable, multipolar world, he says, our diplomats and development specialists have been on the front lines, all too often in the crosshairs of the enemy. The knowledge and experience of these dedicated public servants, members of the U.S. Foreign Service, are unparalleled. Former Secretary of Defense James Mattis stresses the connection between diplomacy and national security. "If you don't fund the State Department fully," he told members of Congress, "then I need to buy more ammunition." At the end of 2018, Congressman Edward Royce, Democrat of California, said of the Foreign Service, "These professionals defend our national security, enforce our laws, and protect our fellow citizens overseas, often at great risk to themselves. Our embassies and consulates are platforms of U.S. influence and vigilance, and our diplomats are often the first to spot threats to our national security. The business community, Royce said, counts on American diplomats around the world to compete in the global marketplace, and to urge the State Department to send more diplomats to the field with the mission of advancing America's commercial interests. How the United States deals with the rest of the world, and how the rest of the world deals with us, does not begin or end at our borders. More than 13% of our population and about 10% of eligible voters are foreign-born. Foreign trade, at over $5.5 trillion a year, affects every farm, factory, and family. Pandemics and epidemics, environmental disasters, refugees, narcotics, and financial panics sweep across borders and beyond unilateral control. Around the world, violent conflicts among nations, tribes, faiths, and ideologies threaten our security, affect our interests, and touch our hearts. We need to make sense of this world, and we need to make sure the world makes sense of us. We need to understand, protect, and promote our own interests. Whenever and wherever we can, we need to shape events to our advantage. To do so requires knowledge, wisdom, judgment, empathy, honesty, courage, and skill. That is why we have a foreign service. The foreign service is the core of more than 14,000 professionals who represent the U.S. government in 275 missions abroad and carry out the nation's foreign policies. Its members serve mainly in the Department of State, but also in the U.S. Agency for Internal Development, USAID, the Department of Commerce, and the Department of Agriculture, stationed wherever the U.S. government has a mission that requires civilian service abroad. Like the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, and the Marines, the U.S. Foreign Service is a true service. Its officers are commissioned by the President, confirmed by the Senate, and sworn to uphold and defend the U.S. Constitution. Rank is vested in the person, not the job. Members of the Foreign Service, with very few exceptions, are available for assignment anywhere in the world. On average, they spend two-thirds of their careers abroad. The mission. The Foreign Service has a triple mission. The first is representation, acting as both official and unofficial representatives of the United States. Official representation includes conveying U.S. policies and views persuasively in the local language to foreign governments and foreign societies. Reporting information of use to officials in Washington and placing that information in an analytic context, and negotiating agreements large and small. If official representation is central to foreign service work, unofficial representation is a condition of foreign service life. Former Secretary of State John Kerry, himself the son of a foreign service officer, put it this way. When you step out of the embassy and go down the street or wherever you live, wherever you are, you're an ambassador of our country. And when you treat people with respect and you give them the best of yourselves, you show them the best of America. And that means showing them what we believe, what we stand for, and what we share with the world. Officially and unofficially, members of the Foreign Service reach into other societies across barriers of history, culture, language, faith, politics, and economics to build trust, change attitudes, alter behaviors, and keep the peace. The second mission is operations. The Foreign Service is on the ground, dealing every day with host governments and populations, protecting American citizens, running U.S. programs, executing U.S. laws, giving effect to U.S. policies, and supporting the full official U.S. civilian presence overseas. It is hands-on and sometimes dangerous work. The third mission is policy. Members of the Foreign Service, through their long engagement with foreign societies, are well placed to predict the international consequences of what we say and do. They are the government's experts on how America's national interests, defined by our political process, can be most effectively advanced abroad. The service is the government's institutional memory for foreign affairs, able to place policy in historical perspective and project the risks, costs, and benefits over the long term. All three missions are essential. A foreign service that sees its mission as representation, including no role for policy, will wait passively for instructions that may come too late or not at all. A service that believes it alone should set policy as well as carry it out will lose the president's trust and become an irrelevant annoyance. A service that neglects operations will exhaust its energy in paper exercises and forfeit leadership to more nimble and aggressive organizations. America's Foreign Service is often called our first line of defense. The National Security Strategy of President Donald Trump's administration said, "America's diplomats are our forward-deployed political capability, a tripwire for detecting trouble and heading it off." But America's diplomats are more than a defensive skirmish line. Among the several tools of American foreign policy, diplomacy is, or should be, the most important. Our tool of first resort. Policymakers turn first to diplomacy as they try to shape the world to America's purposes. Unlike Silicon Valley, diplomacy does not move fast and break things. It moves slowly, sometimes over the course of decades, to build things. When diplomacy works, it builds international systems strong and flexible enough to manage and contain disorder. When diplomacy fails or is not tried, disorder spreads and conflicts happen. As conflicts grow, so does the risk of war. What this book does. This book is a guide to the U.S. Foreign Service. Our work is descriptive, not prescriptive. But it is not agnostic. We have a point of view. The Trump administration demeaned the professionalism of the Foreign Service and impugned the honor of its members. The damage inflicted was severe and will not be easily repaired. But the need for repair is an opportunity to examine the service afresh and address long-standing problems related to personnel, resources, and culture. We do not argue for specific remedies or reforms, but we hope to provide listeners with a clear understanding of the service as it is, with a look back at what it was and a look ahead at what it could become. We treat the service three ways: as an institution, a profession, and a career. The institution. The institution is the men and women and their predecessors and successors who serve the United States under the Foreign Service Act. The people make the institution. At the same time, the spirit and culture of the service shape its members, and in turn are gradually shaped by them. Certain events and decisions have played an especially large role in making the Foreign Service what it is today. The most important are the 19th century split between diplomats, who were responsible for state-to-state relations, and consuls, who took care of commercial matters and citizens abroad. The wall that, until the 1950s, separated officers of the Foreign Service, who spent their entire careers abroad, from officers of the Department of State, who were members of the civil service and served only in Washington. The effective exclusion from the service, until late in the 20th century, of the non-white and the non-male. The posting to war zones, first in Vietnam and then in Iraq and Afghanistan, of large numbers of Foreign Service personnel. A spoils system that in large and increasing numbers favors politically connected individuals over career diplomats in filling senior positions. The political attacks in the late 1940s and early 1950s on the loyalty of the Foreign Service to the United States, and similar loyalty attacks, this time led by the president himself, during the Trump administration. Shaped by these factors and by its statutory design, the service has developed over its nearly 100 years of existence the characteristics that account for many of its strengths and its weaknesses. Broadly taken, the service is elite, hierarchical, cautious, sensitive to status, deeply informed, strong in analysis, patriotic, and respectful of the weight of history. In recent years, the service has also become more diverse, more skilled in languages, less desk-bound, less confident of its position, and less obeisant to rank. Its patriotism and its devotion to the U.S. Constitution and the country's highest ideals are unchanged. The profession. The profession of the Foreign Service is diplomacy. Among professions, it is an odd one, more like journalism than like law or medicine. It is open to all. Specialized training is available, but not required. The skills needed to practice diplomacy at a high level are hard to master, but they are not esoteric. They can be acquired in many fields, including politics, business, law, military service, government, and academia. Some of the best diplomatic practitioners, and many of the worst, are outsiders who start at the top of the diplomatic ladder. Virtually every country that has a Department of Foreign Affairs also has a professional diplomatic service. Only the United States employs amateurs, people brought on board for reasons other than their diplomatic skills or subject matter knowledge in large numbers. Most governments recognize that diplomatic skills are most surely gained through education, training, and experience in the field. A diplomatic service, with rank earned by merit, serves to identify the best talents and temperaments as it weeds out the worst. Diplomatic professionals are skilled in negotiation, communication, persuasion, reporting, analysis, organization, and management. They are quick to recognize ambiguity and dissembling, and can practice both when necessary. They know foreign languages, cultures, and interests, and they have learned, with respect to at least some parts of the world, how other governments make and carry out decisions, and what moves societies to action and change. Equally important, they have learned how their own government works, its politics, laws, and bureaucratic processes. They know where diplomacy fits in within the array of tools the nation can deploy to assert its interests, and they can work effectively with military and intelligence professionals in pursuit of common objectives. One need not be a member of the Foreign Service to be a skilled or even a great diplomat. Talented foreign affairs professionals who come from other fields can bring new ideas and new energy. Political appointees can sometimes bring to diplomacy a relationship with the country's elected leadership, which nonpartisan career diplomats rarely attain. But gifted amateurs are rare. The work the nation demands of its diplomats, around the world and around the clock, is often arcane and sometimes dangerous. As this book shows, the administration of U.S. laws and programs with international reach, management of the official U.S. civilian overseas establishment, protection of American citizens and property abroad, and the daily negotiation of relationships with foreign governments on matters large and small require a dedicated, trained, and professional service. The career. A foreign service career is like a good limerick. It has unpredictable content in a predictable form. The content of a career is a function of specialized knowledge, choice, and luck. In the Department of State, personal preference, acquired skills, and the needs of the service place foreign service officers in one of five tracks: consular affairs, economic affairs, management, political affairs, or public diplomacy. Foreign service specialists work in 19 kinds of jobs grouped into 8 categories: administration, construction engineering, facility management, information technology, international information and English language programs, law enforcement and security, medical and health, and office management. Most, if not all, assignments during a career will be in that chosen track or job category. Especially for officers, regional knowledge and language skills heavily influence the location of assignment, except when the opposite exists and the assignment drives language instruction and the development of regional expertise. Members of the Foreign Service, by law, must be available for assignment worldwide. 2/3 of a career is likely to be spent abroad, and somewhat more than that for Foreign Service members in agencies other than the Department of State. Within these parameters is plenty of room for surprise. The next post, the next job, the next boss are rarely predictable. Change is constant, but it is not random. Although the needs of the service impose constraints, Foreign Service personnel make many of the choices that determine the progress of their careers. When you are in the service, the positions that are open when you are ready to move are the luck of the draw, but your preferences among them can weigh heavily on the outcome. The form or trajectory of a Foreign Service career has less variation. 4 or 5 years in entry-level positions, about 20 years in mid-level positions of increasing responsibility, and for some, several more years in the senior ranks. Retirement is mandatory at age 65, although many careers end earlier. So officers and specialists who begin at the bottom in their late 40s or 50s face truncated prospects. Pay and benefits are set by Congress. Managers are able to intervene only at the margins. The checkpoints for an officer's passage from entry-level to mid-career to the senior ranks are well established, but the requirements for passing through the checkpoints change from time to time and have recently grown more rigorous. The Foreign Service takes over a life in a way that few occupations do. Where you live, the food you eat, the languages you hear and use, even the diseases you contract come with the job. If you have a family, the service is a family affair. Children experience the benefits and challenges of frequent moves and exposure to many cultures. Opportunities for a spouse to work are erratic. Hazardous duty is likely to impose a separation of a year or more at some point, or at several points, during a career. The department's personnel managers give strong guidance to new recruits, but they have declining influence as a career progresses. After 2 or 3 tours, most members of the Foreign Service know how assignments come about this book will help, and should take responsibility for their careers. The service is small. In all probability, once you have finished 3 or 4 tours, which will take about 10 years, you will have a network and a reputation. You will likely know people who can help you line up your next assignment, and anyone considering you for a posting will likely know you or will know someone else who does. Careers are shaped by events as well as by choices. After the attacks of September 11, 2001, and the invasions of Iraq and Afghanistan, members of the Foreign Service, for the first time since the Vietnam War, were sent into war zones with a kind of mission impossible: to work with local populations to build the political and economic infrastructure of a modern democracy. By 2012, about 40% of service members had done 1 or more tours in Iraq, Afghanistan, or both. Then, in 2020, Foreign Service personnel worldwide were caught up in the global pandemic caused by the novel coronavirus. The protection of American citizens at risk took on overwhelming importance, pushing other work aside and taking all the time, energy, resources, and resourcefulness of Foreign Service posts around the world. It is safe to say that no one joined the service expecting to organize a municipal council election in a corner of Iraq, or an airlift to move 800 Americans and 40 Canadians out of Wuhan, China. And those who join the service now cannot anticipate the events that will turn their careers in surprising directions. But in the words of one State Department physician, it is a privilege to get to do the hard things. American diplomatic practice. Shocks and surprises aside, it can be hard to find American diplomacy's center of gravity. In the 20th century, most diplomats spend the bulk of their careers on government-to-government relations. After 9/11, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice concluded that the greatest threats now emerge more within states than between them. She developed the doctrine of transformational diplomacy, shifting the resources into volatile areas and engaging diplomatically with groups throughout foreign societies to bring about behavioral changes consistent with our national security. 10 years later, Secretary Kerry took a similar but less doctrinaire approach. In an era when power dwells increasingly in networks rather than in hierarchies, we have to engage with an ever-expanding array of organizations, groups, and regional and subnational leaders. The Trump administration, however, saw the world and American diplomacy differently. Secretary of State Michael R. Pompeo said in 2018, "Nothing can replace the nation-state as the guarantor of democratic freedoms and national interests. Our mission is to reassert our sovereignty and reform the liberal international order." Other nations, he added, should do the same. "We want our friends to help us and to exert their sovereignty as well." The implication is a Hobbesian world in which alliances and other international arrangements are fleeting, easily tossed aside in the name of self-interest. Trends that had dominated U.S. diplomatic practice through 2 administrations came to an end. These were not all-or-nothing differences. The George W. Bush and Barack Obama administrations never abandoned government-to-government diplomacy, and the Trump administration courted non-government actors like British Brexiteers, opposition leaders in Cuba, Nicaragua, Venezuela, Guyana, and Haiti, and non-governmental organizations and private entities fighting the COVID-19 pandemic. But the degree of emphasis and the commitment of resources to diplomatic efforts in these different arenas differed sharply from the Obama administration to Trump's. As these words are written in the early weeks of 2021.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?